Hello and welcome, everyone. I'm amazingly impressed that there's so many people here, considering that Scott's downstairs. Ooh. Before we start, I do want to thank you all for coming and give away this. This is a Scott Guthrie shirt from the lunch that they had with Scott Guthrie. You had to have one of these shirts from the dev area downstairs if you wanted to go meet Scott at lunchtime. And he's giving a session right now, his part two of something Scott Guthrie-ish. Building Azure apps or something like that? Is that what it is? It's part two. They just had part one. And I want to know, who in the room was in part one of Scott's session and has decided to come here instead of going to the second part of Scott's session? You're lying, aren't you? It's only you, isn't it? You're the only one. Here, have a shirt. You don't have to wear it, because it's advertising a different session, and I'm happy for you not to do that. And I should have picked up the thing. I'm not amazingly big on slides. Jeff's tweeted. My name's Rob Farley. You've probably figured that out. I work for LogSpot Solutions. It's my company. I live in Adelaide, but we have clients all over the place and other countries as well. I have a bunch of acronyms after my name. MCM, if you want to become MCM, make it really quick, because from October 1st, which isn't even like 4 weeks away, you can no longer get that certification. I'm an MVP, I'm an MCT. But please don't ever let yourself be defined by acronyms. There's far better ways to be amazing. You can take what I show you today, for example, and be amazing back at your work. Yeah, I know. I don't believe it either. No, really. Look at the stuff that I do today, and if there's anything that you go, hey, how did you do that, or whatever, please come and talk to me, because I'll happily let you know. I'm also a director of the PASS organization. PASS is the Professional Association for SQL Server, worldwide organization that is Microsoft's main vehicle into the SQL Server community. It's an independent body. It's independent from Microsoft. We have a couple of Microsoft people on the board, but we're independent, and we provide a lot of training and do a lot to try and connect people around the place. There are a number of PASS chapters around Australia, also known as SQL Server user groups, in most of the capital cities. If you're not in one of those user groups, come and see me, and I'll put you in touch with the person that runs it. If you're not a PASS member, go to sqlpass.org and sign up, because there's so many fantastic resources. There's online training, like there's hours and hours and hours of online training every month, and I'm trying to persuade them to do them in, like, you know, better time zones than like 3 a.m. But come and see me about that, because seriously, it's if you want SQL content, and for the number of you that are here, most of you clearly do, and if you're still here at the end, then please come and see me about getting hold of that. It's, you know, Microsoft is very much in favor of PASS, and we want to be in favor of you. So please do that. So cursors. See, I keep wanting to go back to the computer, but I would rather walk around and practice the wireless thing. Cursors get bad press. They really do. I mean, seriously. I remember a while back somebody put together a, you know, what are the worst things you can do with SQL Server? You know, what are the biggest mistakes that you see in SQL Server and so on? And curses is always right up there. They're just, you know, they're evil and so on. They're, you know, people curse at cursors and all those kinds of things. And it's fair enough, right? And they make the whole argument about the set-based logic that drives SQL Server and data and so on versus the iterative code that comes with curses. Right? I mean, iterative, that's the whole looping thing, right? And when I actually talk about cursors, I include like while loops and so on. I've seen people go, oh, I can get rid of this cursor, I'll just put a while loop in. No, that's still really a cursor, because in some ways I like to think of it as being, you know, imperative more than iterative. You know, it's that thing of having a series of commands instead of describing a set. And in fact, let me show you. I press 2, I think, to switch here. And I give it a moment. There we go. See, you guys are lucky to have slides. Normally, I just start in here, and then my opening slide ends up being "Hi, I'm Rob." So if I run a query, for example, I might do something like, well, you know, I'll select from sales.salesOrderHeader, for example. I might get, sales order ID and, you know, salesperson, for example. And I might, you know, I might run this and have a look at to see what the execution plan does. And I might see that it's doing an index scan, right? This is iterative. We've got an operator here that's asking this operator, the index scan, for rows, one at a time. It's iterative. It's looping. Okay? All of this is. In fact, if we say in here something like, well, if I say, for example, fetch order date as well, just to see what days maybe salesperson ID 283, is that one? Cool. It's always a relief. 189 rows coming back. We can see here that we've got like a nested loop operator, and it calls this index seek, which finds all the orders by salesperson 283, and I can look at the properties of that to see more information. And then for every row that comes through here, which is 189 of them, it goes and does a lookup, which occupies like 99% of the estimated cost of the query, but either way. This is really iterative. It is. And what I keep finding is that developers, oh, just a quick show of hands, developers, DBAs, mixture of both. Wow, lots of hands for that. I know. Miscounted, right? Too many. Take the number, halve it. This is an iterative operation, right? If I'd said, for example, like, and order date equals, you know, something, and this is where I start to go, yeah, so five rows coming out of that, it still looks quite the same, it's still 99% of the cost of that. If we have a look at why, I could click on this and see the number of executions is 189, so to find those five rows, it's still got to look up 199 rows down here. This is really iterative, okay? And a lot of people look at the fact that SQL is iterative, really, behind the scenes, and they look at the set-based thing, and they go, yeah, but SQL makes bad choices about how to do this stuff. I'm going to end up doing it myself and control what's going on and so on, right? And they end up using things like, you know, NoSQL, and they put their little mouse controllers down and walk away from them. So what I like to think of is the whole set-based versus procedural side instead. Right, if you've got like a cursor, you've got code that's going through and saying, okay, do this, do this, do this, do this, occupy this row and do something with it. You know, or in the NoSQL world, they say, oh, go and look up this thing and then take all the ones that match that and then go on, for each of them, go and find this. And they kind of reproduce the execution plan themselves, right? The thing is, the fact that, and this is where I'm going to switch back again, and I'm wishing it wasn't like a couple of seconds between pressing the button and changing over. I like how it lights the room up because of the white screen. It's very cool. You know, we see things like the fact that if we create an index, I'll say this is the order date one on sales.salesOrderHeader. They always say don't type in demos. I just go, yeah, whatever. That'll do, but I'm going to say include sales order ID just to be sure. And so we see that, for example, depending on what's behind the scenes, index-wise and so on, that we can get very different kinds of operations. I haven't created a covering index here. I've created something else. I mean, ideally, I would have just created a composite index on both those fields and been able to just use it like a last name, first name lookup in the phone book and go straight to them. Here, I've done the thing that none of you do, of course, but like third-party application developers do. Creating columns on, sorry, I'm not going to ask because I'll embarrass you. If you're a third-party application developer, then yeah, just go and improve your system. Call me, I can help. You know, if you've got a system like this, it's not necessarily amazingly awful because here at least it's saying, well, get me all the orders from 1st of July 2006 through using this index. Get the list of the, you know, use the index on salespeople to be able to find them and then do a merge join between them. This is saying use internal SQL logic to be able to join two sets of data. And if you were trying to write your own code to control what's going on, you might not have simplified that out. The SQL engine has opportunity to be leveraged in different ways, right? I should just drop that index, shouldn't I? Otherwise, I end up with lots of leftover stuff afterwards. But we see all kinds of things, like the fact that if I say like s.name and count star from Jeff at the back, you've seen this query before, haven't you? And I'm going to say left join production.product as p on p.product subcategory id equals s.product subcategory id group by s.name, for example, right? You understand this query, I'm sure. It's counting how many products we've got in each one. And actually, I need to, because I don't want to have to consider which, I'm not counting rows, I'm counting products. So I need to do that to make sure that it's still correct, even if I've got a subcategory with no products in it. And we see what's going on here. We see a nice execution plan and so on about what's going on. But the kinds of smarts that SQL can do is to be able to say, well, if we weren't actually interested in the count, then all we need to do is list the product subcategory. That's the second time I've broken them, right? Not this conference. Obviously, is it still working? I've ripped it out. But you can still hear me. So it's only the people who are...
But it's being
who
recorded.
Are record, who are listening to the recording who are going, what's he saying? So when I come back, I'm going to say that was so important, right?
We've lost the magnet.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, you got it?
Yeah, sorry, I caught it. It fell. And that's such an important point, right? For those of you listening to the recording, I apologize. I just broke the mic. I stood too close to the lectern and the lead caught on something as I stepped away. It ripped the mic off. And I told everybody in the room I was going to do that joke, so you didn't miss anything. Tune back in about court. No. This is point being, if we're not interested in the count, this particular query, if we were trying to do it procedurally, we probably would have collected all that data and then gone, okay, but the bit that we're interested in is just this bit. SQL goes, oh, look, actually, I can render that join redundant and just list the subcategories. That's handy. And SQL has all kinds of logic behind the scenes to be able to make your job better so that if you understand a lot of the translation between what's going on here down to what's going on here, you might not feel the need to do cursors anymore, right? So if you're writing cursors, please have a look to think about why and, learn more about what's going on with indexes and the operators in the SQL, in the execution plans and try and stop writing cursors. Of course, the title of the talk was about fewer cursors since SQL 2012 came along. So, I that type of thing you can do even if you're on, back in, really old, like R2 or something like that. No. You can go a lot further back because the principles of execution plans certainly go back a long way. Almost as a disclaimer, look, there are times when row-by-row processing is still appropriate for what you're doing, right? You may need to call a stored procedure repeatedly because, your third-party application requires it, or you're using, Entity Framework or some evil thing like that. Really, if you're using, Entity Framework, go and, rip them out and actually look at the code that says go and update all these products and their prices or whatever, instead of calling it one by one, just go and create a table value parameter on your stored procedure and handle it in one fell swoop. Not a foul swoop, that's something else. One fell swoop to be able to... I got smiles from the people in the audience who just go, that's right, Shakespeare says fell swoop, not foul swoop. It's all these non-educated people that think it's foul swoop. Sorry? I went to school, that's right, I did. I read Midsummer Night's Dream twice.
Well, you are English.
I swapped hemispheres before I read it the second time. So, I mean, you can use Table Value Parameters and get a lot, you know, better performance than having a really talkative, chatty client, and take a much more set-based approach where you give SQL the opportunity to do things in better ways, touching less data and having less load going on. You're going to be decreasing the amount of traffic that's communicated between your client and SQL box, because you'll do it one time. And if you've got to transfer, all 20 rows of data back, that's still not expensive compared to having to, you know, negotiate the connection pool and so on 20 times, right? Please, if I say something that makes you just go, I have no idea what he's talking about, please just kind of ask the person next to you. Just let me know, because feel free to ask a question, because it probably means Tim hasn't got it at all, right? Tim's very smart. Ridiculously smart. So it's not him that I need to worry about. It's Jeff. I'm not saying which Jeff. Jeff, all the Jeffs in the room, put your hand up. It's one of you three. There's only... Table valued parameters. He's saying, just to explain that a bit further, table valued parameters, you can, ever since SQL 2008, you've been able to create a table valued parameter, which you create a user-defined table type, and then you can define that as a parameter, as a user type of a parameter for a stored procedure. And inside T-SQL, if you're calling it from another piece of T-SQL, you declare a table variable, matching the user-defined table type. You put a whole bunch of data into it, and then you call your stored procedure once, using that table variable as a parameter. From .NET code, you can cheat, right, the first time and say, hey, work out what the bindings are for this, so you can use the right types and it will set up everything for you. But you basically populate like a TDS data table and so on. I say TDS, it communicates using the table data stream. But yeah, it's very supported both from clients and so on. So if you're pulling a whole bunch of data down to your client and then letting people edit it in the client, and then you say, now save this, don't just loop through looking to see the things that have changed. Actually, you know, look at your data table that you've been maintaining. Look for the changes. If anything's deleted, keep it, because you need to send that back saying, this is deleted, rather than just not passing it back and then trying to have that kind of question is it not there because it's been put in since I started editing, or is it not there because I meant to get rid of it? You set a flag to say this is getting deleted. And then you do things at once, call the stored procedure one time. But most frameworks won't let you do that. They'll just go, we'll give you an update single thing, because they think in classes, not in sets, right? One of my frustrations with AdventureWorks is that they give singular table names, because it's almost like they think in classes with methods on classes instead of sets. You should always be thinking about sets. Sets, sets, sets. Just get obsessed about sets. Think about sets every 6 seconds or something like that. Right.
Yes.
And to do that, give your tables plural names. Talk about the catalog of things, or the Sue asks if that breach the relational model. No, it doesn't. Not at all. There's schools of thought, obviously one way or the other. But if you're thinking how to manipulate the set of products, you will always write better code than when you think about how to manipulate a single one of those products. If you're, but as .NET coders, you make a class called product and you go, here's the method to be able to do this thing to it. And you don't think so much about saying, well, if I've got a collection of this, here's what I do to the collection to do stuff. But SQL wants to deal with sets. But SQL wants to manipulate the sets of things. It's tables, it's indexes. They want to be able to manipulate the set. So, see you, Helen.
Sorry.
Oh, okay, cool. I've taught her before. She's probably heard this. She's definitely heard the jokes. Jeff says, haven't we all? Thanks, Jeff. Again, not saying which Jeff. I feel sorry for this Jeff, because I've not met him before. Only just before the meeting. But we haven't met him before, have we? That's good. I've been there before. Sorry, yeah, have we met you? Really? You don't remember? It's fun to do to other people. Really? You don't remember that afternoon? And then you just walk off in a huff. And you just... They're checking their phone. What the... Anyway. Sorry?
You just weren't that memorable.
I just wasn't that memorable. Thanks, Reed. Reed isn't even his real name. It's William. But he gets called Reed because he's American and they do that. Casual racism is always good. TVPs. Another scenario is like, you know, it's if you've got like different table names that you'll need to process. For example, the undocumented SPMS for each table store procedure. That's kind of one of the system store procedures, undocumented, but quite useful. It creates a cursor, and it loops through with dynamic SQL to be able to do stuff. I think it's been recorded me saying this before. The system store procedures are there doing useful things, and one of the great features about I'll cover the rest of this point in a second. There's things you can do to be able to handle different table names, like in what you get in Dynamics. System store procedures, one of the great features about them is that, if I go into VentureX 2012, programmability, store procedures, system store procedures, and you see all these system store procedures, and there's like three documented SPMS somethings. There's three of them that are documented, and just a couple of extra ones. Still going. There we go, and we're at the end of them. So yeah, there's just a few of them. And seriously, don't. One of the great things about these, I'll just grab SP Who2 for example. You all know that one. Is that you can hit modify, right? I can't actually change it, but you can see what the code is, so that you can learn never to code like that. because this is SP Who2, and if I scroll down here, you'll see that it's doing all this stuff. You get special action, not sleeping. Yeah, whatever. And you'll see it's very procedural code that's going on here, which isn't necessarily bad, it's just, you know. But then we get down and we see, oh, look, hang on, now we've got a thing that says output the report. And it creates this dynamic SQL as opposed to, I don't know, passing in a proper parameter. But anyway, it should be using SPXQ SQL and so on. And so we keep scrolling down and we see, back up a bit. So we see, for example, it returns SPID, which is a, you know, converted into five characters of the value SPID, because it's really important that you format stuff when you're returning it as data, right? Anyway, I shouldn't be so cynical. But seriously, when you get down to the bottom and you see SPID again as a handy extra for right-scrolling users, So let me switch back to my query window over here and go SP Who2, because they think I might run this and go, yeah, this is process 3, and then be scrolling to the right and just go, oh, I wish I remembered what SPID that was. Oh, look, there's a handy extra. Don't do that in your code. Please don't do that in your code. Only have each column named once. Do you know how many... Have you ever tried calling SP Who2 from like an application and then gone, now what's in the SPID column? And it just goes... It's just awful. I mean, really. And so you go, well, that's fine. It'll just be a query. I'll have a look and see what it is. And then you see all this code, you're just like, I'll go and use SP Who is active instead. And it's much nicer. Big plug for Adam Mechanic, useful guy. But so, for example, one of the things you can do, and I'll just close that because it's just... I don't want to accidentally switch to it and shudder. So, for example, in Dynamics, anybody use Dynamics? Few of you, because the rest of the people that use Dynamics aren't here. They're too busy to be able to come to a conference, and they get the jitters because it's the people who use Dynamics are chuckling. You all are, I saw.
It's a great product.
It's a fantastic product, but it's full of dynamic SQL. If they got rid of the dynamic SQL, they'd have to rename it Microsoft Cursors. But it's lovely. You go into something like Nav and you create a company and it goes, oh, here's like 1,000 tables for that company that are Yeah, I know. And so you get things like, so, you know, my company's Lobster Pot Solutions. You get, you know, it creates a whole bunch of tables called things like Lobster Pot Solutions, with spaces, of course. And then like a dollar sign and like, you know, annual leave, for example, like that. You know, so you get tables like that. And then if I also have like, you know, what, Contoso, for example, you end up with like, you know, Contoso. That's a made-up company as opposed to Lobster Pot Solutions, which is, you know, fantastic company. You know, and so then you have like a thing to say, show me the details for this particular, you know, for annual leave across all the companies that I've got. And you go, right, so I'm going to what? Make a cursor that steps through each one? Because I can't just make a query that says, pass in which one I'm interested in, right? You've all seen, the few of you that use Dynamics, you've seen code. But the rest of you probably have seen code like this because people learn from things like Dynamics. They don't know to just see what code is in in third-party products. Absolutely. And go, let's avoid doing it that way. So that, you know, so other people do this same thing as well. So let's quickly create a table with this stuff. I'm just going to say select star from sales order header. Why not? I'll just be consistent. Sales order header. I'll just get a few columns. Maybe order date. Maybe salesperson ID. Maybe total due. Why not? I'll just get them, and we'll just create a table called that. Right. So I'll create that in a moment, and I'll do similar for like this one, right? And I'll do similar for Jeff at the back works for Oakton. I used to work there many years ago, so I'll happily put that one in as well. I shouldn't, because you know, someone else who works for Oakton might just go, seriously, what the? I'll make up in company. Oh, AdventureWorks, why not? That's a made up one. Okay. So I'll just get rid of that. Control R to do that if you haven't seen that trick before. So I'm gonna create three tables. Okay? So a bit like you would in Dynamics, okay? Now, yeah, let's quickly do this. Okay? Three tables with 31,000 rows. Bye, John. It's his prerogative. I won't feel rejected. He'll come back. So what you tend to do is you end up seeing a cursor which grabs like each company name and then creates a string which has got, you know, that in there, and we end up using like quote name, you know, the company name plus like dollar annual leave, right? And we end up doing this kind of thing, right, to be able to work out I don't have it there, but you know you end up with a cursor where you populate this thing here. I'll just go varchar. 50 will do, I think, for now. And that should be nvarchar. Assist name, nvarchar 250 minus annual leave, whatever. Lobster Pot Solutions. And to be strict, I'll put the N there. Oh, and I'll put a semicolon. So if I do that, I get, like, you know, the table name and so on. So they use this kind of method to be able to then create the dynamic SQL, and it's horrible. What I would rather do is to be able to say, well, let's create view. DBO, Lobster Pot Schema, because otherwise I end up with junk around my AdventureWorks. I'll say all annual leave with no spaces, camel casing, as, and then I'm just going to like use union all stuff, right? So I go as select star from that union all, select star from Contoso. I need to just refresh this. I didn't create those tables in the proper schema. Doesn't matter. I was going to create them in my one. I should be using that. Please use schemas when you refer to things. Please. And use aliases for your column names. And just, you know, practice those good habits. Because otherwise, when we come along and try and fix your stuff, we go, seriously, which table is this column from? It's just much harder to do our job. Or don't get us in because you write good stuff the first time. That works too. So I could create a view like this. The problem is that then I can't tell which runs which, right? So instead, I add this on there. Lobster Pot Solutions as company name. Right? Right? And I might prefix it so that I know that it's my one as opposed to somebody else's. Right? And just to be sure, I'm going to cast this as something long, right? Just to be sure that it's that. So that I can then just come in here and say, and you know, Contoso and Adventure Works. But I could automate the scripting of this. I could use like for XML path and script this, in which case I'd probably have that construct in all of them just because I can, right? Because now, having created, oh, not 5, F5, that's better. Really? Did I just create it? Let's quickly check. Select star from LP, all annual leave. Yeah. So I can see all the 31,000 of these and so on, right? Thing is, the execution plan, of course, looks at all of them. And they're just, I don't have clustered indexes on it because I was lazy. It's just for demo purposes. You'd have them properly structured and so on, of course. Actually, they would have been created from Dynamics, so they'd be proper tables. But what a pain. I've got to then, like, what, look through all of them for the right records and so on. The amazing thing, though, is that if I say where LP company name equals Lobster Pot Solutions, it's smart enough to know that it only needs to bother with my one, not the one for Contoso or the one for AdventureWorks, right? Because it sees the constant in there, sees your where clause, and just goes, you know what, it can never match those other ones. I'm not going to go near them, right? And now I can have all my indexes and whatever on that, and it's going to use it as if I can query my all annual leave as if it's a single table with that where clause in there. I can even say where in Lobsterpot Solutions or Contoso. And I should actually put the ends there, shouldn't I, because it's nvarchar. I could do that and see that it only accesses the two that I'm interested in and still leverages indexes and so on according to what I'm looking for in those tables, right? So you just need to be able to have a routine that says when we add a new company, go and update the definition of the view so that it just keeps working. And then all your reports and so on that you build against that yourself can do that instead of the cursors. But again, this is not 2012. This is, you can do it in 2012, of course, but you've been able to do it forever. Because SQL's always worked like this. Okay? You got a question? Yeah?
If you put that select in a stored prop and pass the parameter of the thing in the
stored prop. Yep. Great question. Love the question. What he's saying is if you put that into a stored procedure, right? Can I say equals? Because, equals company name, right, just company. All right, so what I want to do is I want to say, can I just declare it? I'll just go declare company, oh, I've got one up here, right? No, I got rid of it. Unbelievable. Nvarchar 250 equals lobster pot solutions. Now, the thing with this is that when we query this, it doesn't know ahead of time which one it is, right? And so because of that, we see all three. But, and this is the thing, when you look at what's going on with your stored procedure, right, you'll get a plan that comes like this, and you'll be like, well, it's not doing what Rob said. Go back and use cursors, right? But this is the really neat thing. See these filters here? In fact, see the thickness of the arrows here, right? Obviously, this is because it's saying, well, give me all the ones that match whatever, right? Because, you know, you read stored procedures from the right, don't you? Who's heard that? You read stored procedures from the right. Who's heard that? Just one of you, really? A couple of you? Okay, unlearn that. Stored procedures suck. They don't push the data through. They suck it through. And apparently, if you hold them up, they sound like a dolphin. Again, apologies to anybody who's listening on the recording. That was really funny, and you have no idea why. And they're going, well, go on, explain it. No, I'm not going to. You'll have to ask somebody who was there. Send me an email. Ask me on Twitter. See these filters? Look, there's a thing here. I'm going to zoom in. I'm not running Zoom It yet. Let me quickly run Zoom It. I recommend for anybody who's a presenter, stick Zoom It onto your, like, lock it to your start menu. Look at this. There's this thing called a startup expression predicate, which checks to see for that one that's AdventureWorks, does it match? Okay? This is a startup expression predicate. It's a different kind of filter. And what it means is that this table scan here, if I look at the properties of it, the number of executions is zero. It doesn't do the table scan. It reserves the right to, because you might call the stub procedure with AdventureWorks. But it puts a check there and says, only do this table scan if they've actually passed in AdventureWorks as the parameter, as a company they're interested in. Right? Check out these startup expression filters, because they mean that that thing that you were always taught was like the start of the, you know, that you always taught was the start of how to read an execution plan over here. No, this one doesn't even run, because the execution plan sucks it through and it gets this filter and it goes, oh, nothing to do. So why is its cost so high? Because these are estimated. Anytime you see the cost here, that's the estimated one. I heard somebody in the crowd say potential. Yeah, it's the potential cost. It's not the actual cost. You don't find out the actual cost. It just guesses. Because actually the execution plan is what it says. It's a plan. It is what it uses, but it creates the plan before it runs it. This is the actual plan. It's what it actually used. And so you do have actuals in there. But the cost is the estimated cost. So it's a bit different. So if I ran this, if I go down to where I can run it, if I run it with Contoso, for example, I can end up getting the same, you know, the same plan, but the actuals, the thickness of the arrows based on the actuals says, well, now this one's also where all the data is coming out of, and we would see number of executions on this and this being zero. Of course, you would never get this. You wouldn't have a table scan, would you? Right? Just saying. So there are things you can do and have been able to do forever. Here we go. To be able to get rid of some of the row-by-row processing. But I get it, there are still scenarios where cursors are better. But please use your imagination to be able to get rid of things and let the optimizer do what it's really, really good at. Now, I want to show you something about what happens when set-based stuff goes wrong, which is what we're going to address looking at the new stuff in SQL 2012 that goes nicely. First of all, we're going to start with a small set, okay? So I'm going to say select tops 10 of... Hang on, I had something similar. Let's start with one of these, right? So I'm just going to uncomment that. I'm going to go LP dot... I've got sales 10 with select top 10, right? So if I do that, terrific. So I've now got lp.sales10, okay? I apologize for all the times that I don't put semicolons at the end, okay? Now, what I want to do is put a running total on there, okay? So I've got my data here. I want to have like a running total of total G, okay? So I'm just going to do it this way for starters. I'm going to say select sum of total G. Let me quickly alias this, as this is the current row. And I'm going to say from lp.sales10 as previous rows, right? Where prev.salesorderid is less than current, or less than or equal to current.salesorderid. And at some point, I should refresh the local cache using the button that I put here. But yeah. So right, there's my running total. It works nicely. Right, fantastic. I'll put that into production with my 15 million rows. Right, it works nicely. For those of you who go, oh, you subqueries are bad, you should have done that like by going, join to another copy of sales 10 as priv, and then gone on that, yeah? And then I can say, give me current dot star and sum of prev dot total due, this kind of thing, and you just go group by current dot star, current.sales order ID and current.total due, and let's just kind of only put them in the list instead so that we can avoid the standard error that we all know and love, right? So if we do something like that, that gives us the same results. Yeah? Let's say order by. It's the same results, isn't it? You all agree? I haven't messed anything up. I might have done. Yeah, so I've got this data here, I've got that data there. If I look at the plans, they're very similar. Is one of them not sorted? This one's not sorted. Order by current dot sales order ID. These two queries, I get that I've got different lists of columns, but they're the same query, okay? It doesn't matter which one you do, these are the same query. I'm just tidying it a bit so that it comes back looking like the same query, 50%, okay? The slight difference in plans here is kind of like rounding error kind of stuff. This one has a stream aggregate up over here. This one has a stream aggregate in here. They're very, very similar. They're functionally, they're just about the same. And I don't care which one of these you use, they're both crap. And even if I say create index, create unique clustered index, CIX 10 on LP.sales 10 on the sales order ID column, for example. Right, so if I do something like that, I'll just create that index so that then I can run either of these queries and see that it's so much more effective because I can scan that and then I can seek that. And look, now they're still quite a little bit different. But they're still rubbish, even with the clustered index and not having to do table scans, a scan and then a seek. Still rubbish. Because if I come over here and say, well, let's do like 100. Actually, first of all, let me turn set statistics IO on and run those ones against 10. Set statistics IO on. Okay. And then I'll just run one of these. It doesn't matter which. So that's 22 reads. Okay. To do that. Now let's create this one that's 100, that's 100 big. And I'm going to refer to 100 and 100. And then down here, this one's easier to do, isn't it? Because they're next to each other. So I'll run one of these again. See, it still works. Terrific. Nice and quick. 101 reads now. Okay. If you do 1,000, well, oh, I didn't change the table names. I was thinking, really? It's always fantastic when you do something and then you don't get the answer back and then you have this moment. This, what have I done wrong? 5,000 reads for that one. Sorry?
I can see where you're going with this.
Why? Yeah, so Glenn can see where I'm going. Jeff's saying why. Yeah. I'm not saying which, Jeff. It could be the one that knows Glenn. Sorry. It could be the one sitting at the back of the room. It's not this one here. It even works out that with the kind of effort that it should do, it should just scan that whole thing and just stick it into an index pool, which just goes, I'll try and work it out quicker. But that 5,000 is kind of like doing some people call this like a triangular join, because to figure out that 1,000th record, you need to look through the 999 prior ones, and people just go, yeah, this is why you can write a cursor. Because if I, for example, went declare what do I want to put here? Static, local, fast forward? Local, fast forward, static, they're very similar in performance, but I just don't use either of them, right? But if you have to use a cursor, And I'll say for select sales order ID and total due from LP dot, we'll start with sales 10, okay? Order by sales order ID, and I should just hit this button here so that it helps. And what else do I need to do? I need to open that, yeah? I need to declare a couple of variables, and you know, you paid good money to see me type this stuff. Running total as is it money? Sure, money. And I'll start that as zero, so I don't have to think about nulls and all that thing. And then I can say fetch C into SOID and running total, but I also want I'll just call it TD. That's the money one that I'm wanting to be able to populate with the row out of there. Don't ever use the money thing. I know AdventureWorks uses money, but don't use money. Use something that's got like two decimal places because that's important for us in Australia. Otherwise, people start to say, "Hey, so what happens to all the bits that round?" Don't bother. Seriously, just you know, numeric something, comma two, depending on how much your boss earns. Right? In my company, it's a small number before the comma two, but in other companies, it's very different, I'm sure. So there we go. While, and you know this stuff, at fetch status equals zero, we say begin, end, and of course, we need to make sure we copy this line inside the bin, you know, because otherwise we get that lovely looping thing going on. And then at the end, we say close C and deallocate C, right? And before I do anything else, I need to make sure that I turn off show execution plan and set statistics IO off because I don't want to run this with those things on. I'll kill Management Studio. But we've got another way of being able to look at the reads and so on. And so in here, I want to be able to say select running total, like plus equals TD. But then I've got to be able to store that somewhere. So what I want to be able to do as well is to say, well, declare a table. Okay, I'll just go like results as a table that's got SOID int and you know not null and running total as money not null, and then I can say insert res values. SOID and running total, and I should list the columns, but I'm being lazy because I'm not that interested in that. And then at the end, I can say select star from at res, right? You know code like this. You've probably done it even though you won't admit it here. Oh, as? No, is it, why is it complaining? What have I done? It's like that, isn't it? No, what have I done? As? For? Sorry? Don't need a comma. What have I done? There's four. Sorry? I don't know how to use it. Crap. That's hilarious, isn't it? I've given this talk before. I teach this stuff. I just, for some reason, it's the... That's nice. I know, it's going, really? Cursor four. No, down here. Declare cursor name. Oh, of course. I don't, you know, cursor local, fast forward, four, no commas. Declare cursor name. Oh, do I not use? I don't use the at, do I? It's not a variable. Let's see. How bad is that? That's just unbelievable. So I'm going to run this to make sure we get the right results. That's good, right? No kidding. Thing is, in fact, I want to be able to see the performance. So I'm going to quickly jump into here. I say quickly. I'm going to come down to the management bit, and I'm going to go into extended events, which is running at the moment. And I'm going to very quickly set up a new session. I'm going to use the wizard. Wizard. And I'm going to call this batches for TechEd. Blanks fine. I'm going to switch to events, and I'm going to look for the batch. SQL batch completed. That works. I'll move that over to here. I'll configure that and say, yeah, give me the SQL text. That'll work. I could filter it. No, I can't be bothered. It'll be fine. Yeah, no, they're event fields. You only, when you set up extended events, you pick the global ones that are in everything here. You'll see. Look, I'll hit OK on this, okay? And you see batches for TechEd. I'll say start the session, okay? And then I'm going to say watch live data, okay? And now I run a query like this. And then I see nothing here. The reason why is because it polls to get that. It doesn't necessarily appear like immediately. It gets it at some point later. So what I'll do, I've run that. And if I, and to be able to get like a comparative thing, I can run like something like this and so on. And at some point I'll see that, I'll see stuff come through. Oh, look, here's my declare. There were 80 logical reads on that one. Terrific. If I, what I'm going to do is I'm going to come down here. I'm going to go with the 1,000 one, okay? Because, you know, I can. And I'll run that. In fact, that'll come through in a minute. In fact, what I might do is I might go back further here. I might go get the top 10,000, okay? Because the nice thing with this is that I can show you how the cursor runs on 10,000. No, I need to change the thing, don't I? 10,000. And we'll see that it takes, it's not too bad, 10,000 rows. And it really is 10,000 if I go down to the bottom, 10,000. Okay? That's not too bad. As opposed to if I do this one with 10,000. And wait for a moment, because obviously set-based options are far better than cursors. There we go. Cool. So anyway, look, we've got some stuff. Oh, we've got all that kind of, this is why I should have put a filter in there. I told myself, oh yeah, I'll use a filter on that, but didn't. So this here, this is the 1,000. We've got 5,000 reads on that one. So it's kind of similar to what we had on the other one, wasn't it? So there must be one after that at some point. Let's scroll down to the bottom. It's not there yet. I'll quickly just do something like this, just to kind of, you know, try and prompt it to load it into the extended events. I'll keep talking as well. That would help. Oh, here we go. This is the long one. 165,000 reads. Right? Ouch. So somewhere before this, I should have the cursor that I ran. And yeah, I should have put a filter in so it didn't grab these. Here's my 10,000, 50,000 reads. So that, on just 10,000 rows, is already three times better in just terms of logical reads. So obviously cursors are fantastic. Go and use cursors, because if you're doing a triangular join, don't leave now, please. And don't turn off the recording. If you don't turn off the video, and don't quote me unless you put, like, obviously sarcastic. Okay, Rob, you don't do not sarcastic. In SQL 2012, we see if I go back to the help system, we see that we've got over clause, and we see this new bit of the over clause. We see partition by clause, order by clause, row or range clause. That's a typo. It's rows with an S on the end. But we saw beforehand. I better not sound. just bump the volume button. If I say select star from RF sales, not RF, LP. Sales, 1,000, why not? No, 10,000 is fine. We know from a long time back that we can say sum of total due over, right? You've seen this? You can do that, yeah? Who doesn't know this? Oh, a few. Okay, you know how when you just go select sum of total due from this, we only get one row back, right? It's an aggregate function, you know? Arsenal plays Fenerbahce, 3-0 in the first leg, 2-0 in the second leg. We take the aggregate, which is a single result, 5-0, qualify for Champions League again. Tim's an Arsenal fan as well. He's a good guy. He's very smart. 1-0 against Spurs. Oh, my goodness. How much did Spurs spend? 110 million at that point. And how much at that point, how much had Arsenal spent? I know, sorry. Back to SQL, sure. Seriously, 1-0 to the Arsenal against Spurs. Felt really good. We're top four despite the fact that we've already lost the game. Oh, my goodness. Love it. One row, aggregate row. You know, it doesn't matter how many matches, aggregate row. Right? Two games against Fenerbahce, fine, but one result, the aggregate. The thing is the fact that if I want to be able to show all the other columns as well, then that kind of, that's a pain. I'm going to start getting, you know, that error. You know, that error. Yeah? You all know that error. It's how you write group by clauses and how, and it's what I say, you're doing it wrong. If you write group by clauses like that, seriously, before you write your select list, think about what you want to group by. And if you're grouping by a thing, right? Like, remember back up the top? Remember up the top here I said group by s.name? That was me doing it the bad way, just so I could make this point. I'm grouping by subcategory, right? When I have a look at this query, with the execution plan on this time, when I look at this query, here's the grouping bit, it's the aggregate. It's grouping, it's not grouping by s.name, it's grouping by p.product subcategory, because it can. It knows that the name is unique, and it realizes that it can take a shortcut. If it weren't unique, it would have to do the join and then look through the string and actually group by that. We're saying group by product subcategory ID. What we should be doing is we should be saying group by s.product subcategory ID. And I know you're saying, but you're not returning it up here. Why do you want to? But that doesn't matter. You're wanting to group by the subcategory ID. If you've got two subcategory IDs with the same name, have two rows for them. Why have we got the same row twice? Because they're different subcategories. Otherwise, you're grouping by the name, aren't you? Right? We didn't say group by the name of the subcategory. When we were given the instructions for this query, we were told group by the product subcategory. Just the fact that we're not interested in the subcategory ID doesn't mean we shouldn't use it in the group by clause. If you write your group bys being driven by that error message, you're doing it wrong. I understand you're probably taught badly. I forgive you. Just don't do it anymore. Just saying. This query is exactly the same. And in fact, this query remains exactly the same even if I take the uniqueness off that name. Right? Do it that way. Seriously, you will see benefit in your queries because it groups by the IDs, not by the long strings that you happen to be returning. Right? Much better idea, but better way of doing it. Right, anyway, you get that error message. But if you use the over clause, it doesn't destroy the window. By using over with blank like this, it says do it across the whole data set. And now we get all these rows plus our grand total. Okay, and if you want to have that reset for each different, I don't know, salesperson, for example, use partition by, which is just like group by, but, you know, in the over clause. And now it gets reset for each different salesperson. So we've got all the null salespeople here. I'll scroll down a lot because, you know, that's just the way the data goes. See, and for each different one, we get a different value for our total. Fantastic. But we want to, say, have a running total. And so we want to say order by salesperson ID. No, not sales person ID, sales order ID. Huh. Sales order ID. It's because I wrote partition by. This is the answer. This is what we had before. And this is new in SQL 2012. Okay? And it works nicely. I'm going to run it again just because I want to try and persuade this to come in here. Which one did I do? The 10,000? The 10,000. Fantastic. Okay? 90,000 reads. It doesn't actually seem like it's all that good. But this comes down to the help thing, the help file. Where's the help file gone? There it is.
Always read the help file, especially with the analytic functions because the syntax is different for too many of them. But if I scroll down here,
general remarks. If partition by is not specified, the function treats all rows of the query result set as a single group. I showed you that. That was bracket. If order by is not specified, the entire partition is used for a window frame.
If rows slash range is not specified, but order by is specified, that's what we had.
Range, unbounded preceding, and current row is used for the default window frame. So what it says is it does this, okay? Range unbounded preceding and current row. And we run that and we get an error because it's wrong. It's actually range between unbounded preceding and current row. Okay? Now bear in mind, if we said range between unbounded preceding and unbounded following, right, then that becomes the same as the whole lot again. Okay? For those of you who follow me on Twitter, you know I don't have an unbounded following. So let's just go with current row for now. And we've got this. This is what was giving us our 90,000 reads. Thing is, it's rubbish. It's the default because Microsoft follows the ANSI standards, because if they don't, then all the other people just go, well, you should follow the standards. So Microsoft goes, fine, whatever. And let's like Excel consider that 1900 was a leap year when it wasn't, because they follow the standards. Seriously, back in the day, Lotus, right, says that 1900 was a leap year and Feb 29 existed. It wasn't a leap year. You know the rules, remember, from school? 1900, not a leap year. 2000, yes, because it's divided by 400, right? In Excel, it thinks that 1900 was a leap year. And the days of the week for, like, January and February are wrong in 1900. And the reason why, it was deliberate, and it's because the standard says, for spreadsheets, Lotus did it wrong, set the standard, and then Excel came along and went, well, we have to follow the standard because otherwise people say, oh, Microsoft, you don't follow the standard. Rows is better. It's not the standard. Always specify a rows or range clause. Okay? It's much better. Right? When I get this come up in a moment, it's going to... You'll see how much better it is. Okay? But also bear in mind, this is really powerful stuff because I don't need to say unbounded preceding. I could say like three preceding, for example, which adds up four rows. Like this 9-7-ish one is the sum of those, right? 3-6, 3-2, 2-7 and small. 9-7, right? It's very powerful. Sliding window. Remarkably useful stuff. Okay? Hang on, let's go back to here. Have I got the... look at this. Sum total due over that rows between unbounded preceding from sales 10,000. Logical reads 45. He's holding up 10. He wasn't meaning the answer to this query. Matt, the sound guy, is saying I've got 10 minutes to go. I get that. The rest of you are going 10. What's this? 45. The sound guy doesn't know what he's on about. He can't read properly. So anyway, only 45 minutes to go. We better be quick, right? See what I did there? 45 reads. It's a difference between rows and range. Okay? To see the impact of rows and range, let's do the thing that I did by mistake before and go order by salesperson ID. Okay? Now, this one, see? Rows has given us like this, right? Happy with that? Range, that's three preceding. Let's go unbounded preceding again because we can. There's our, I'm back, so that's our rolling total to all the way up. If we make this range, it doesn't feel like it's worked properly. The reason why is because it considers that all these are the same point in the range. It looks for different values. So it was okay when I was using sales order ID because guess what? They're all different. This one, not so much. And that becomes expensive because it's got to be able to keep where it's at and be able to go, okay, well, what's the sum across all of that? Rose just goes, well, I'm just walking through the data, keeping track of where I'm up to. All right? Range says, well, I want to consider all these the same points. I've got to keep track of where I am. I've got to be able to, you know, go back. You know, I've got to look through the whole range bit, take the sum for that, and then be able to provide that to the value at the start again, and you can imagine why you suddenly get 90,000 reads instead of 45. Just a little bit of performance gain just by not using the default. Right? I would have happily had them just give warnings if you use the default for that, but they don't. So use rows. Please use rows. Okay. Now, back in the help system, okay, if I go back to the top of the page, sum, you'll see this. You'll see it says here you can use the over clause with functions to compute aggregated columns such as moving averages, cumulative averages, running totals, or a top n per group. All kinds of nice things that you can stretch your thinking with. There are also analytic functions which let you be able to look at the first and last value, for example, in a thing. Now remember, if you use last value with the default settings, that's between the start of the window and the current row. So the last value is kind of a bit like the current row. So if you use last value with that, you might want to think about where the end is and use like unbounded following on. But if you're using, you know, if you're not ever relying on the default, it'll be really obvious that the last value is going to be the current row and that you should change that value, right? But if you use like lag or lead, you can say, get me the row before or get me the row 3 in the future or whatever, and do all kinds of powerful things that you may have been tempted to use cursors for before. You may have used like row number and joined the two sets and so on, but this is better still. Percentile on a continuous bit and percentile on a discrete one. This is to find the average of Australians, and this finds you the average Australian, right? You know, the average number of legs is slightly less than 2, because there are plenty of people who only have one leg or no legs, and they bring the average down. There's not so many that have more than 2 legs. Sorry, I just couldn't help myself. The average of Australians is like one of various body parts, as opposed to the average Australian, which has 2, depending on whether there are more of one group or less. You know, the average Australian has exactly, you know, it has exactly 2 arms and exactly 2 legs, and is a certain complexion instead of, and has a certain hair colour, as opposed to just trying to take the average of all the hair colours and so on, and becoming remarkably deformed. That's percentile continuous versus discrete. Discrete finds the one. Continuous is only on numeric values that can be averaged. The cumulative distribution and the percentile and the percent rank show you how far you are through a particular set. Okay? Annoyingly, they all have different syntax, so please look them up. And up here where it says, you can use analytic functions to compute moving averages, running total percentage, or top end results within a group. No, that's the over clause. That's not the analytic functions, but thanks for trying. Do get used to reading the help system, but take it with a pinch of salt and try it out. Look at the performance. Use extended events like I did, and you will benefit significantly from that. So how does SQL 2012 help? Well, the enhancements to the over clause are huge, really. It means that all kinds of things that you used to get frustrated for, you know, in the past, or let the client do the work. You know, I always told people, running totals, let reporting services do it. It's got a nice function. Just return the set Let it worry about it. Pivoting, let the client worry about it. Don't try and do it in SQL. Dynamic pivot, just let the client do it, really. Clients deal with cursors. SQL deals with, I'm so pleased I stepped in the right direction because it's the edge there. SQL deals with sets better. If you're making it through a cursor, sure, let, you know, pass your set back to reporting services where it can just run through every row at a time and all that kind of thing. But the overclause enhancements with Autobuy in it lets you really leverage it in a very powerful way. I thought I pressed the button. There we go. Please feel free to ask questions. Some of you asked questions as we went along. Thank you for that. It was a good demonstration that, you know, Tim really needed to know the answers to those questions. Thank you. Feel free, honestly, to track me down. I'll be floating around. I won't be in the speaker room anymore. I'll be down at the SQL area or at various points. I may often be down at the Pluralsight booth because I'm a commissioned author with them. I haven't published anything yet, but I will soon. Have a look in a couple of months to see if I've got stuff there. Feel free to take a business card or email me at these types of places to ask further questions, ones that you didn't want to ask during because you were having so much fun, you got distracted. Related content. Most of the ones that I reckoned were definitely worth being at have already happened, but you can track them down on the results. But really, anything in data is worth being at. And apparently, Scott Guthrie sessions are quite good too. Thanks for coming and not going to his. There's a hands-on lab, which is exploring new T-SQL features. This includes the overclause stuff. So if you want to try this out at this event, go and do the hands-on labs. Talk to Jeff, this Jeff, who's one of the proctors down there, and he can administer a hands-on lab on you. That's wrong. Find me later, please do. Feel free.